The building, new and white, is a cliff of ferro-concrete at the junction of two main roads. The site, one reflects, must be of enormous value, and the cost, had it not been acquired by compulsory purchase, prohibitive. Within, there is a lift, not working, and an austere staircase which climbs past a succession of splendid aluminium windows. On the second landing, there is a board pinned with dignified notices about rambling club, leave rotors, retrospective pay awards, and a furtive note almost overlapped, deprecating the continuous theft of toilet paper from the staff lavatory. One treads with humility, if not guilt, in this priesthood of civil servants. There are novices in jackets which do not quite match their trousers, lay brothers in ready-made suits with leather elbows, and here and there monks with authoritative faces disappearing through doors marked private. This is a hierarchy, and one knows it at once. Here are the trolleys bearing cups without saucers, and here are the trolleys bearing cups with saucers. One looks for signs of human foible, a stain of lipstick on a china cup, a fag end in a fire bucket, but no. Even the missing toilet paper one feels can be explained. On the fourth landing, there are several doors marked private, and one in particular with nothing marked on it at all. Outside it, there is a trolley and an oval tray with a teapot, a milk jug, and a single unchipped cup and saucer. One stares uneasily. Here, one feels, is the abbot himself, and one is right. It is the office of F.K. Gaunt, Her Majesty's Inspector of Taxes for Cursitor Fields District.
Let me see now. You say it came this morning?
Yes, sir.
And the postmark?
8 p.m., 25th, Dagenham.
Let me have it. Oh. Now, let's see. Ordinary cheap buff envelope, sheet torn from a kid's exercise book, long hand and ballpoint pen.
And no perfume?
No. No perfume.
But an interesting message.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like a quid for every anonymous letter I've received. I've done 40 years in this game, and I'm sorry now I didn't stick them in a scrapbook. What a catalogue of envy and spite it would have made. Most of them don't repay investigation. A little outbursts of malice from people with trivial minds. Do we know Jones has a seaside house, or that so-and-so keeps a flat and a mistress in Curzon Street, you know, that sort of thing. And businessmen start boasting in pubs and clubs and lodges about how little income tax they pay. And that causes jealousy, and sooner or later you get one of these. There's seldom anything that can't be answered by a smart-aleck accountant. But there's always the odd one out. The one that brings a handsome harvest. You don't really like it, do you?
No, sir.
Well, nobody likes anonymous letters. We can't just chuck them in a waste paper basket. There's something I'd like you to remember, East. Something you're in danger of forgetting. We're not concerned with morals or ethics or human behaviour. Only with the collection of revenue. All that rot you were talking the other day about savage back duty settlements didn't sound like a tax officer. We work for the Treasury, East. That's our side of the fence, and unless you remember it, you won't make much of an inspector. Understood?
Yes.
Good. Now, let's take this note carefully. The handwriting's deliberately disguised. In one or two places it slopes backwards, and that's a style that's common to women. But there's something else that's phony about it. You better watch Toby Dixon of Oast House Wood. He's cheating you proper. Just ask him about the bank account in Marylebone. He ain't what you think. Now, this is supposed to be the letter of a semi-illiterate, but is it? With M, spelt without an H, and a difficult word like Marylebone, spelled correctly? Doesn't ring true, does it?
No, it doesn't. And even if people talk like that, they don't often write like it.
You're improving, East.
Does it matter who wrote it?
Everything matters. If there is a case, you want as complete a picture as possible. And look at it this way. Supposing you knew or suspected the writer was someone associated closely with Dixon, someone with knowledge of his affairs, wouldn't that give the letter extra weight?
I suppose so.
Someone like an employee or a wife?
A wife?
I could tell you some stories. Have one?
Oh, thanks.
You better sit down. We'll have a look at the file. That is the file, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Dixon. Toby Dixon. I don't recall the name. It's not one of mine, is it?
No, sir.
What sort of a mess is it in?
I've had the file 2 weeks, and there's been no occasion to work on it, but I'll tell you what I can.
Oh, that damn view.
So?
Hmm? Out there. You'll be surprised what a distraction it is. Once those damn derricks start shifting cargo, you can't drag your eyes away. I tried moving my desk, but it didn't do any good. I wonder if it distracts the staff.
I doubt it. Most of us aren't as high up as you are.
Hmm? Oh, yeah, of course. Now, what about Toby?
Yeah. Tobias Frederick Dixon. The file begins in 1946, when he left the army. He set up a men's outfitting shop in Macedonia Street on the strength of his gratuity and a loan from his father. Recently opened a branch in Iron Founders Square. Calls himself the Paris-London Luxury Men's Store.
Swanky. I know the one in Iron Founders Square. Candy-striped beachwear, suede jerkins and Italian suits. Teenage muck.
That's where the cash is today, sir.
Oh, I dare say. Now, the accounts made up to the 30th September each year. Everything seems to be here. Let's look at the annual returns. Wife, 4 children, 2 of them babies. Mother-in-law claimed as dependent relative. Substantial life assurance. Owner-occupier of the Squirrel.
That's the Osthouse Wood address. Private estate about 3 miles from Esher.
Classy?
Well, I tell there's some good property there.
I see. Well, we'll come back then. At the moment, I'm more interested in the accounts. They're prepared by a bloke named Cobb. Cobb. Name rings a bell. J.T. Cobb, Intercontinental Accountant. What the devil's that?
God knows. A few of his jobs come in here. We don't much care for him.
I know the type. 6 months bookkeeping evening classes, adverts in the local rag, books collected in a plain van, and 20% on all income tax recovered. Do you believe in instinct, East?
Instinct?
Yes, a feeling about things.
I suppose so.
Something wrong here. I'm certain of it. You see those files on that table? Well, there are about 20 cases there. 20 cases I'm going to investigate. In most of them, I've no real ground for suspicion at all. I just feel they're wrong. And you know something? My instinct will be right in nearly every case. I'll get a settlement out of 3/4 of them.
That could mean that 3/4 of the taxpayers are always on the fiddle.
Yeah, it could well mean that. Most of the cash traders milk the till. You know it and I know it, and the board knows it. And yet there's no real attempt to nail them. They expect us to clear the current stuff and do the inquiry work as well. I'll tell you something, East. Give me the staff and a really wide authority, and I'll get you £100 million in back duty.
I'm quite sure you would.
What's the net annual value of Dixon's house?
Oh, 70.
Fair size. What did it cost?
We don't know. He bought the site for £700 in 56, built the Squirrels and occupied it late in 57.
So we don't know what he spent?
No.
You live at Thames Ditton, don't you?
Yes.
Nice?
Well, we like it.
Not far from Esher?
Not far, why?
Well, next time you take the wife out, have a run up to Osthouse Wood. Get a look at the Squirrels. Smell around a bit. Try to form an impression. Put yourself in Dixon's place and ask yourself how much it would cost to live there. Well, you know the kind of thing. If there's a double garage, it's 10 to 1 the wife's got a Momo. Or you might see a gardener there. Nanny for the kids, or a hard court at the back.
Or even a swimming pool.
Yes, even a swimming pool. It's invaluable in these affairs to know the style a man's living in. The case starts off in the right key, and we know what we're talking about when it comes to drawing.
We're not even sure that there is a case.
Pull your chair around here, please. We'll examine these trading accounts together. I've not yet seen them, but I'll comment on them, and I'll ask you to listen. Agreed?
Yes, sir.
Just look at that. Did you ever see such a filthy mess? J.T. Cobb at his worst. Badly typed. No comparative figures for the previous year. Spelling errors. A ridiculous certificate that has no value whatever. And a large ink stain with the word sorry penciled against it.
Behind the shop in Macedonia Street, there is a small parlour, now used as an office and a storeroom. The walls are lined with shirt boxes and suits hanging in polythene covers. There is a fanlight protected by an iron grill, and April sunlight slants down in warm bars across the faces of a man and a woman. The man is corpulent and expensively dressed, with a bow tie and shoes of an uneasy red glint. His face is flushed with emotion. The woman, middle-aged, wide-hipped, and with a silver artificial curl falling on her brow, is weeping. The cheeks are streaked with mascara. Her name is Roberta Cooper, and, among other things, she is Dixon's clerk.
So I sat here after you'd gone, just staring at the desk and playing about with the bits and pieces on it, and I couldn't think of anything but you and me. I heard the staff go, and it began to get dark, but I didn't move. I just sat there, thinking about the times we'd had. I couldn't believe it had really ended.
Take it easy, Dax.
I don't know how long I sat there, but then I got up and I switched on the light, and I caught sight of myself in the mirror. Oh, I looked awful, Toby. Yellow and puffed up with crying. I looked old.
Easy.
That's what you've done. You've made me old.
But you knew it had to end.
Oh.
What's all this in Ada?
I'm telling you. I opened the safe to put the books away, and there it was, the painting book, you know, the one for the manner of an account. I picked it up and I turned the counterfoils and...
And what?
I wrote them a note.
Then?
The tax people.
What?
I wrote them a note. Telling them about the account.
You did what?
I don't know why I did it, Toby. I wanted to get back at you somehow. I wanted to hurt you.
You've hurt me, all right. You've hurt me where it hurts most.
Why did I do a terrible thing like that? Why did I write to them?
You tell me.
Oh, Toby, darling.
I don't understand. We've had good times together, ain't we? I'll give you a nice bit of cash, nice clothes. We knew it couldn't last.
I didn't want to lose you.
Fancy shopping me to them ruddy bloodsuckers.
Oh, I'm sorry, Toby.
No, it's a bit late now. They say the bloke up there is real hot stuff.
I only told them about the account at Marylebone.
Only? Do you know how much I got there? Let's see. It's just after 11. They'll be open now.
Oh, the pubs.
The bank. I'm drawing the money out. Right down the last halfpenny. I'm going round to Cobb.
Oh, I wouldn't do that. Toby, he's no good to you. Get someone first class.
Listen, that crooked geezer's had 200 nicker a year out of me. Now he's going to work for it. It's all right, Dax, really it is. Oh, Toby will get out of it. You just got to be careful, that's all.
What a tum you're getting on you.
Yeah. It's a terrible thought, isn't it?
What?
You know, tax blokes. Even now they might be sniffing around.
Turnover's running at about 20,000. In this trade, I'd expect a minimum of 25% gross profit. On some of the stuff they sell, they get as much as a third, but I'm prepared to concede that clearance sales and the effect of soiled, unsaleable goods might reduce it overall to the 25%. But what do these accounts show? A gross profit on trading of 3,500. And what percent is that?
About 18 or something.
Yeah, well, there you are. Now take the stock figure. It's in here at 1,850. That's pretty low, you know. This class of goods isn't cheap. He'd have to carry a much higher stock than that if he's going to turn it over at a rate sufficient to satisfy demand.
I agree.
There's either a large undisclosed reserve here, or Dixon didn't take stock at all, and it's the lowest figure Cobb thinks he can get away with. You noting all this down?
Yes, sir.
Now, deduct the wages and the overheads, and it comes down to a net profit of just under the 600. It's not much, is it?
Not much.
Let's have a quick deco at the balance sheet. Now, that's the figure I'm interested in, the drawings. Total drawings for the year, 480 quid. Ah. Now, that's all that Dixon has to live on. And mark you, he has to pay a life assurance premium out of that, amounting to £160. That leaves him 320. Well, about 6 quid a week. Could you live on 6 quid a week?
Not unless we stopped eating.
And according to his annual return, there's no other income, no investments or rentals or interest, just the family allowances for three kids.
Yeah, which the wife would pinch.
Exactly.
Mm. Well, what now, sir?
It's difficult. You see, all this is ordinary comment arising out of accounts. The queries should have been raised at the time and settled one way or the other. For obvious reasons, we can't ask a direct question based on an anonymous letter. It's only when there's an omission from a return of income that we find ourselves with a lever we can really use.
But there is an omission.
I don't get you.
It's there. I can see it in the file. Look, there. Section 29, notification from the trustee savings bank. And it states that Mrs. Amelia Dixon was credited with £33 interest. It definitely hasn't been returned by Dixon. There's your lever.
Then we've got him. Well, you know the drill, East. Write to Cobb. Tell him that trustee savings bank income has been omitted and that we'd like to have a sight of the savings book.
Right.
Tell him we'd also like to know the source of the deposit. And while you're on it, tell him we're reopening the trading accounts. Give him a list of those queries you've been noting. And we'd like an interview with Dixon. Put the wind up him. Maybe it'll shake Cobb off and we'll get someone more reliable. Don't mention the Marylebone account, of course. If we keep something up our sleeves, we may get a higher penalty. All right?
Yes, sir.
And check if there's been a wages inspection. If not, get on to PAYE downstairs and tell him to put a good man in, someone who really knows his way around. Dixon can't refuse. It'll be a good pretext to have a look at the books.
Very well, sir.
The squirrels abut the edge of Osthouse Wood, and on this serene spring morning is touched by early tree shadow. It is, as Gaunt suspects, expensive, with a fine stone gable and a deep porch with a ship's bell which is rung with enthusiasm by tradesmen, and a tradesman's entrance which is never used except by Toby and his family. A line of dripping napkins flutters over the lawn, and a gardener hoes disdainfully at the flower beds. Toby and his wife Emmy stare from the terrace at this sylvan scene. They are finishing breakfast.
You cannot hang those napkins on the front lawn, love.
No? Where do you want me to hang them? In the lounge?
Don't look right. Not in a neighbourhood like this. Besides, old Tom catches his face in them when he crosses the grass.
Do it good. I'm sure he never washes.
Marmalade's gone.
Here, aren't you going to open the post?
Why do you always keep on about the post?
Because I never get any, that's why.
Yeah, you open them.
Thanks. Mostly bills.
Old Tom's getting browned off with those nappies.
Who cares? Six bob an hour and no rough work. Well, who does the digging? You?
Well, he don't reckon to.
Oh, there's one here from Cobb.
Cobb?
Yes. He's chucked you.
Sure.
Yeah, he's chucked you up. He sent you a letter from the Inspector of Taxes.
Showers. So it's come.
What have you been up to, Toby?
As if you didn't know.
You've been on the fiddle.
Of course I've been on a fiddle. Where do you think a place like this comes from? I can't pay tax and live like this, can I?
Oh, what with one thing and another. First it's that bag at the shop.
Now don't bring that up again.
A man of your age messing about with a married woman.
For God's sake.
Sex, mad, that's you, like
all
men.
I told you I'd give her up, that's why I got this.
Sex on the brain.
I've given her brush off so she shot me. She wrote to the revenue.
Serve you damn well right.
Well, it won't do you no good either, will it?
Eh? What do you mean? What do you mean it won't do me no good?
Well, you read it, didn't you?
Yeah.
I would also refer to the omission of interest credited to Mrs. Amelia Dixon's trustee savings bank account. Da-da, da-da. Request sight of the book. Yeah, what do you think of that? Your book, your money.
And your problem.
How come?
Look, Toby, I've brought up two kids and I've got two babies. I've slaved night and day
you worked your fingers to the bone.
And what I've got, I keep. And if you think I'm going to pay tax on my bit of savings...
It was me to give you the money.
Did her pay it?
Huh? Oh, listen to it.
Sure, she's the one that's had all the fun.
You're tired, Dux. Tired. I'll tell you what.
Say.
I'll get you some help for the house, eh? One of them foreign girls.
Yeah, you'd like that, wouldn't you? A bit of teenage skirt to bring your tea up in the morning.
Why don't you talk like a lady?
Because I didn't marry a gent, that's
oh,
why.
Oh, shut up. I'm worried.
Here. Could this be bad, Toby?
It could.
Blimey. There's quite a bit in that book, about 1,500.
Chicken feed.
Aye? You mean it's worse than that?
That book's the least of my worries. I've got to get myself an accountant.
He does so. The offices of Charters, Elvin and Company, lie on the bend of the river at the fringe of the Cursitor Fields district, and, in fact, Robert Charters can look across congested waterways to those same derricks that provide so compelling a spectacle for Gaunt. His is an impressive office, ornate furniture and a number of framed professional diplomas at which Toby Dixon stares with appropriate awe.
Mr. Dixon, I want you to listen carefully. I want to make my position clear to you. I make it a rule never to act in these cases unless I'm put in possession of the fullest information. I want books, documents, personal records. I want access to everything that may have the slightest bearing. I want complete candor. Is that understood?
Sure.
I mean, after all, I'm acting for you, not the revenue.
Yeah.
I can't represent you unless I have the facts. And if I'm short on information, that's a disadvantage to you and an embarrassment to me. You do see that, don't you?
Sure, I see it.
There's also a question of fees. I'd insist on a substantial payment before beginning. Yeah. These cases tend to run on, you know, years sometimes, and there's a great deal of work and responsibility.
You get me out of this jam, and I'll see you all right, Mr. Charters.
That's what they all say. That's what they say when they're worried, and they can't eat or sleep for the anxiety of it. They'll promise anything. It's a different story when the case is concluded. If it goes the wrong way, they resent paying the accountant. And if he gets them out of trouble, they tell him the fees can't come to much because there was no case to answer anyway.
A bit of a cynic, ain't you?
No, Mr. Dixon. Just a man with a lot of experience.
Don't keep me in suspense.
I'd want 500 on account.
500?
Well, how much do I have left when I pay tax on that? You tell me.
Well, I don't know. But there's an angle there. I'll tell you what. I'll pay you 300 cash. That helps you. Helps me too.
That's a very revealing suggestion, Mr. Dixon.
But no dice.
No dice.
Yeah, I'll see you've got heavy overheads.
Oh, yes, indeed. The rent alone. Do you know this office space is leased at so much a square foot? I often sit here and think about it. That chair you're occupying, for example, about 4 square feet, I suppose. Do you realize what that space costs me per annum? And that cabinet over there doing practically nothing.
Well, you could try moving it.
I'm not joking, Mr. Dixon.
I'll write you a check. Charters, Elvin and Co. £500.
Guineas.
But you said...
Guineas. Always guineas in the profession.
I see I'm in the wrong game.
If you'll just sign it.
Ah, I'm a ruddy clock. It's no damn good.
I don't follow.
The check, I've drawn it on the Marylebone account. You know, the one I told you about on the buzzer.
I still don't see.
Well, there's nothing in it. No cash. I took it all out. As soon as Robbie tells me what she does, I'll go around and take it all out.
Was that wise?
No. Damn silly. I got in a bit of a flap.
How much was that?
About 6,000 quid.
And where is it now?
In the biscuit tin.
Those biscuit tins.
They're quite good, really. You can put them under the floorboards. The notes keep dry for years.
I'll remember it.
Look, Mr. Charters, we're both men of the world. We all like to fiddle on the old tax. These blighters only waste it when they get it, don't they?
Now, let's talk about this Marylebone account. You made a mistake when you closed it. That's an admission that the money is suspect. Why should you withdraw a sum like that on the day they received an anonymous letter? They know at once why you didn't.
I got in a panic.
Take my advice. You'll pay the money, now all of it, into your current business banking account. You can state when you're asked. The business wasn't too liquid. You needed the cash for restocking or something like that.
You're the man for me, Mr. Charters. I can see that.
Then you'll send the 500 guineas in the morning?
I will, God's honor.
By the way, who is Miss Cooper?
Miss Robbie.
An employee?
Wow, she's down on the books. Between you and me and the gatepost, she don't know a debit from a credit. 20 smackers a week and a chassis like a Rolls Royce. Ah, you know how it is, Mr. Charters. We're both...
Oh, yes, yes. We're both men of the world.
And we all like a bit of crackling.
The inspector mentioned your wife's trustee savings bank account. How much does she have there?
About 1,500.
And you never returned the interest?
I didn't know she had an account.
Well, that's your story.
I'm sticking to it.
I don't see the savings book here.
Well, I'll send it to him.
You... You sent it to them?
Well, I wrote to old Cobb and told him they wanted it, so we sent it off.
You sent it off?
I shouldn't have done that, should I?
No. I won't know what I'm talking about, what kind of banking she's making, over what period the account accumulated. It's all very important.
No, it's all Cobb's fault. 200 a year for doing damn all, and now I'm in it, right up to my eyes. He's the one who should be answering all this.
Well, forget him. Let him go. He's an unqualified man. He'll get you into more trouble than he'll get you out of. Now he's gone, it'll help our case.
How so?
Well, don't you see? You can tell the inspector that as soon as you realize things were wrong, you went to a properly qualified man. That's a point in your favor. There's a lot we can blame Cobb for. He won't dare show his face to refute it. That'll be our line of defense, Dixon.
Toby. Everybody calls me Toby.
That'll be our defense. Toby. You're an ignorant man. You don't like paperwork. You don't know a balance sheet from a laundry list. You left everything to Cobb. Everything.
Yeah, that's it. All Cobb's fault.
And even your annual return form, you always signed it blank. You sent it on to Cobb, trusting him to fill it in properly.
Well, I trusted that man.
Was it your fault that he didn't ask any questions?
Feel better already.
Of course, that 500 guineas is only on account. You realize that.
Now, look here.
If the case goes well, I'd want a good deal more.
Oh, I'm sure you would.
Another thing. I shouldn't mention Miss Cooper. Not in that way, Toby. One always keeps sex out of it where the revenue is concerned. Seems to upset them. It won't help your case. They're all very moral men with plain, stodgy wives. They just don't like it.
Mm, I remember.
Let's have a smoke. Oh. Now, Toby, let's get down to facts, eh? You've been very frank, and it seems obvious that certain monies have escaped assessment.
Come again?
You've been on the fiddle.
Yeah, you can put it like that.
It's my duty as a practitioner to warn you of the possible consequences. I want you to understand here and now that I don't guarantee to get you out of the mess you're in without some payment of the revenue. I'll act in your interest to the best of my ability, and if there is a liability, then I'll try to keep it to the very minimum. Is that understood?
Yeah.
Now, the first hurdle is the interview. Inspector will have a colleague present, and they'll take a note of the points raised and the answers given. So be careful what you say.
It is the morning of the interview, and Toby Dixon has dressed with meticulous care. Gone are the signs of affluence, the monogram shirt, the handmade shoes, the immaculate suiting. He has chosen a uniform of decency and respectability, which bears, nonetheless, the subtle marks of failure. A suit threadbare but carefully brushed. Shoes cracked across the instep but vigorously polished. A tie slightly frayed at the knot, displaying a regimental emblem which hints cunningly at a selfless wartime service. As a final touch of artistry, he has removed his left cufflink and substituted a neat loop of string. It is 10:45, and Gaunt is speaking.
And even if I accept that you weren't aware of the existence of your wife's trustee account, that still doesn't explain the source of the savings, does it?
Well, you better ask her.
I'm asking you.
My client is naturally prepared to make full restitution of the tax lost on the undisclosed interest.
Why should I know what she saves? A man can't ask his wife a thing like that.
£1,500 in 5 years.
That's £300 a year.
Well, there you are. £6 a week. That's her wages from the shop.
Does she work in the shop?
That's what I said.
With two babies to look after?
I've got a mother-in-law.
That's right, sir. Hmm? It's on the claim for allowances, the dependent relative.
Leave him to make his own answers, will you, East?
Well, like your assistant said.
My colleague?
My girl works hard in the shop, damn hard.
Does she come up every day?
Every day.
In her own little car, eh?
I never said that.
But she does have a little car.
You'd better look in the garage.
Are these the business bank statements?
Yes.
I'll look at them instead. And here it is, right under my nose. Surrey County Council, £25. What do you say that is?
Rates?
Road tax. For two cars. Make a note of that, East. Two cars.
Oh, he's dead clever, isn't he?
And why not a car for the wife, Mr. Dixon? A sign of middle-class success, the new status symbol. Before the war, it was a fur coat. Oh, by the way, has she a fur coat?
Well, if she has, I ain't bought it for her.
Why change your accountant?
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I suppose I would in your position.
Well, no doubt Mr. Cobb felt himself unqualified to act in an investigation.
It's all Cobb's fault,
though. It always is. Now, let's see what private assets we have. Wife's trustee account, $1,500. Marylebone account, $6,000. Two cars.
And the house, sir.
Oh, thank you, East. And the house. What about the house, Mr. Dixon?
What about it?
What did it cost to build?
Oh, couldn't say exactly.
Well, have a guess.
Well, 3,000?
3,000? These days? Oh, come.
Maybe 4?
Well, 4,000. Plus 700 for the ground, plus 1,000 for the furnishings. Say 6,000. Got a nice swimming pool?
The goldfish like it.
Total private assets, about £14,000. It's not bad for a man returning modest profits.
You've got a kid's money box.
Yeah, yes, there is the question of children's savings.
Now, you can leave my nippers out of this.
I'll leave nothing out. I want facts, figures, information.
And a nice fat check at the end of it.
Then you do admit there's money due to us.
I admit nothing.
£14,000, Dixon. Considerable accumulation.
Look, ain't a man entitled to save it?
Not at our expense.
My client did raise a mortgage at the time of building the house.
Yes.
£3,000.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that, Mr. Charters. But why did he raise it?
Why? Why do you think?
At that date, There was a balance of some £4,000 to your credit at the Marylebone branch. Why borrow money when you already had the cash?
Oh, I don't know.
Why pay interest on an unnecessary loan?
I can't remember.
And I'll jog your memory. You preferred to pay interest rather than reveal the account.
Look, I'm fed up with this ruddy third degree. Now, I'll tell you something. I slogged it out for 6 solid years in the army while blokes like you were sitting on your backsides drinking tea and dreaming of your pensions. I come out with a D-mob suit, sore feet, a gratuity of 60 quid and damn all else besides. I didn't go into civil service. Oh, no. Had a few more guts than that. I borrowed a bit off my old man. I set up in business and me and my missus worked like hell till we got some capital behind us. And you know what we did then? We put it all back in the business. We took a risk. Risk! Something your lot don't understand, never will. All you want is to lick the cream off when the other bloke's made it, and I'm the bloke that pays your wages, and don't you forget it!
Mr. Dixon.
You want to put me out of business?
Oh, of course we don't want to put you out of business. You're going to be one of our best customers.
11 a.m.
And the accounts present several very unsatisfactory features. Have you seen them, Mr. Chodder?
Yes.
A mess, don't you think?
Well, this bloke, Cobb.
Ah, Cobb. The intercontinental accountant. The man in whom you place absolute trust. The man who filed accounts without any kind of prior approval from you. Accounts you simply wouldn't understand anyway. Isn't that what you're saying?
You're saying it.
And it happens to be true. My client paid Cobb to do a job. He's entitled to assume Cobb did it. He's a shopkeeper, not an accountant.
Yeah, I wouldn't know a balance sheet from a laundry list.
But you can read, can't you?
Yeah.
And you know what profit is.
I've got an idea.
It's all down here. It's all very plain. Profit, 1959... £590. Profit, 1958, £468. Profit, 1957, £404, and so on. Now, Mr. Dixon, I want you to answer very carefully. I want you to tell me if you think those profits are a fair and reasonable reflection of your trading activities.
But that's a question my client can't reasonably answer.
No? The man's not an idiot, is he? He ought to know whether he's making 500, 1,000, 2,000.
I advise you not to answer.
Well, there's nothing to
ask. Now, at this stage,
I'm merely interested in deciding whether or not there's a possible loss to the revenue. I think there is. So do you, by the sound of it.
I'll not sit here while you browbeat my client into making damaging admissions.
Browbeat? All I want is an answer.
James, please.
Now, couldn't we cooperate, Mr. Chatters, just this once?
11:15 a.m.
Now, look at the trading account. Do you know the percentage it reveals? The rate of gross profit to turnover?
No idea.
18%.
Is that good?
Well, you ought to know. You've been in the trade 15 years.
Turnover percentages, gross profit. You're blinding with science, Guff.
You make more than 18%, Mr. Dixon.
What do you think it should be?
25%. But at least 25.
Well, my client's policy is one of continual stock clearance. There are frequent sales at cost and below cost, bound to reduce the normal percentage.
And the dirt that comes blowing in them two shops. Well, you never believe the sort of stock I got.
No, I wouldn't. Not with those expensive shop fronts.
Expensive?
You didn't build that one in Iron Founders Square under 2,000 or 3,000.
I don't quite follow.
There's nothing in the accounts, Mr. Charters. No expenditure on the new shop front at all. I'd like to know what's happened to it. The exact cost, when it was paid, and to whom. And in particular, the source of the cash.
11:30 a.m.
Worried about this drawings figure. After paying your life assurance, you're left with about £6 a week. It's not much, is it?
We live very quiet.
Yeah, not as quiet as that, surely. £6 a week, a man with 4 children.
You manage.
Do you smoke?
No.
Never?
Never.
Your fingers are stained with nicotine.
Proper little Gestapo, ain't he?
Well?
Picric acid. I burnt myself.
And, of course, you don't drink.
Never touch it, ulcers.
But you do eat.
Oh, a right comic we got here, too.
How much do you give your wife?
5.
And leaving a pound for yourself.
That's it.
Well, I can see you don't spend much on clothes.
That's very unfair.
Yeah, this gardening clothes.
Now, look here.
This masquerade from a man who actually deals in clothes. You forgot to take your gold repeater watch off.
12 noon. Gaunt is slowly turning the folios of the Marylebone banking account. He's smoking. The room is unbearably quiet and there's no sound but the faint rustle of paper. Toby Dixon stares greedily at the wreaths of smoke, at the occasional movement of Gaunt hand as it flicks ash from those incriminating pages. He's feeling the first pangs of desperation.
We
We know you had a letter.
Letter?
Anonymous.
Don't get you.
Oh, yes, you do.
My client is distressed. He's rather nervous.
And I don't blame him. £6,000 accumulated over 3 years.
Let's not prejudge the case.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Dixon, is this your private current account?
Yes.
Get this down, East.
Yes, sir.
Are these shop takings?
No.
Are you sure?
I said no, didn't I?
Do you know what fraud is?
You tell me.
It's the intent to deceive. And if the revenue can establish that intent, your position is considerably worsened.
He's only trying to frighten you.
Yeah, ain't doing so bad, are
they? I'll repeat it. Are these shop takings?
No.
Look at these bankings. Regular bankings in round sums. And especially big bankings in spring and at Christmas time.
So what?
Well, I should have thought it was obvious. They're the big seasonal sales. Look at this one. £800 at the beginning of April. What's that? The spring sale?
No, spring meeting.
What?
Epsom.
Oh. Can't we settle just one back duty case without a yarn about betting wins?
Well, it happens to be true.
And the large Christmas banking?
Over the sticks.
The sticks?
Steeplechase. That'll be the Boxing Day meeting.
Hey, Mr. Charters, I'd like to hear your views on this story of betting wins.
I've no views at all.
Hmm. Your client could withdraw the story at this stage. I'd agree to expunge it from the record of this interview.
I said betting wins, and I mean betting wins.
The whole 6,000?
Most of it.
I see. Well, I'd better put you in the picture where my department's concerned. We don't dispute that punters enjoy occasional wins, but we do dispute that they win large sums consistently. The bookies earn a living, and that means there are more losses than wins. If the taxpayer persists in the story of betting wins, then we assess the deposits as trading receipts and leave him to appeal and take his case to the commissioners. And I can assure you, Dixon, that the commissioners won't accept the story without some kind of evidence to support it. Bookmakers' statements, for example.
12:30 p.m. Gaunt is still toying with the bank statements.
Large sum to keep on current account, Mr. Dixon. Why not invest it? You could have placed it to deposit.
My client...
Let him answer, please.
Oh, I don't know. I'll never give it a thought.
I'll tell you why you didn't invest it. You didn't want it to earn interest. You knew the interest would be returned to us by the bank, and that would disclose the existence of the account.
Pure assumption.
I see the account has been used for personal payments. That means the bankings would amount to more than 6,000. Rates, electricity, water... What's this one? Temple of Purity, 6 guineas?
That's my lodge. My lodge.
I am not a Freemason, Mr. Dixon.
No.
And if I were, it wouldn't help you.
I can well believe it.
About the investigation.
Back to 1946, I think.
1946?
Yes, the year you began in business. Nice, convenient date.
Yeah, but that's 14 years. The bloke in the pub told me that
you said you didn't drink.
Never misses a trick, does he?
Taproom lawyers. You tell your barfly pals the 6-year time limit doesn't apply when there's fraud or willful default.
Fraud? Willful default? Those are strong terms and absolutely unjustified, if I may say so.
Dixon, I don't know if Mr. Charters has advised you of the drill in these cases, and I won't weary you with technical jargon, but the procedure is to prepare capital statements from year to year to find, as near as we can, the increase in your personal capital. Once we have that annual figure before us, we can compare it with the profits on which you've been assessed. The difference is the measure of the underassessment, or, as you would put it, the fiddle. Care?
Oh, yeah, like mud.
Well, of course, it doesn't end there. You'll have to make a full restitution of the tax lost. And in addition, there'll be a substantial penalty. That's in consideration of our not taking proceedings for the full amount of the penalties for which you made yourself liable. You understand it?
I'll get the general message.
And one thing more. At some future date, you'll be asked to sign a certificate of disclosure. That means you'll be certifying that you've made a complete disclosure to us of all assets of yourself and your wife existing over the period of the investigation. And I'll give you a word of warning, Dixon. It's a fraud on the Crown to sign a certificate when you know full well that you haven't made a full disclosure. You'll be in very serious trouble.
The parlour behind the shop in Macedonia Street.
Betting wins, he said.
You've got to have evidence for a yarn like that. Bookmaker's statement.
I don't see.
Your old man, he runs a book, don't he?
Yes.
Well, I'm right down a pan, ducks, and I ain't coming up no lily in me hand, not without help.
Now, Toby, do be careful.
Rare dotty he was, just like one of them cartoons you see. Tall and thin, bright birdy eyes, and I don't like a bleeding egg. Give you the creeps.
Oh, my old man wouldn't help.
Of course not. Would you stick your neck out like that?
No.
I want some of them statements of his. The blank printed accounts he sends out on the credit bets.
He'd never part.
You could get them for me.
Oh, dear, I never could. How?
Knock them off.
Oh, I couldn't do that to
him. I'd never miss them.
Yes, but all the same...
Look, you got me into this, didn't you?
Yes, I suppose I did.
Well, now you can get me out. Ah, oh, come on, Dax. Do it for old Toby.
Well, how many do you want?
A week later. There is a dockyard strike, and Gaunt stares moodily from the window across the wharves to the silent ships and unmoving derricks.
Look at that. They've actually left an enormous crate suspended in midair above the hold. Why don't we go on strike, East?
You will, when you've seen this.
What is it?
A batch of bookies accounts. Toby Dixon sent them.
He wouldn't dare.
He would, and they look all right, too.
Let's have a deco. William Guppy, turf accountant. In account with T.F. Dixon. East, have you checked on this?
Yes, sir. I've been on to Tyburn District. That's where he's assessed. He's really William Cooper. Guppy's just a trade name.
Big boy?
No, quite small.
About 30 monthly accounts here, spread over 3 years. That's some very substantial winnings, by the look of it.
About 7,000 quid.
7,000 quid.
They seem authentic.
Yes, but there's a sort of new appearance to them.
New? They look pretty grubby to me.
Yes, they're too grubby. He's creased them up well, and you can see where he's wiped them on the floor, but... It's not the sort of discoloration you get with age.
There's even a bit of egg stuck on this one.
Now, Toby's quite an artist in his way. Did you notice the string cufflink?
Yeah. These accounts.
Ah, yes. Now, this is very serious. Let's sit down. Now, let's take this thing from the beginning. Now, as I recall it, the tale about betting wins didn't come up until I'd got him in a corner on the question of the spring and Christmas banking. And Charters himself was obviously at a loss when Toby mentioned it. Now, this is the point, East. Toby and Charters had plenty of opportunity to discuss all this. And if Toby had 7,000 quid's worth of evidence in his possession, he'd certainly have produced it to Charters. And Charters would have produced it at the interview. It was the complete answer to our charges. But he didn't. Why not?
Because it wasn't in existence.
Of course it wasn't. He's trumped it up since. But there's something fundamentally wrong here. Something I can't quite grasp.
You could, check the runners, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You'll find Hall's racing record for 1959 in that bookcase. But it's unlikely that a wise boy like Toby would slip up on a thing like that. Got it?
Yes, sir.
Good. Now, we'll take one at random. Take the Brighton meeting for August, the Preston Park Handicap. What won it?
Broken Fetlock.
Broken Fetlock? Who ever heard of a horse called Broken Fetlock?
Well, it is a handicap, son.
Not very funny. What was the starting price?
11-2.
According to this, Toby placed his bet at 30-1. Now, take another one. The August meeting at Newmarket, the Grantchester Stakes.
Cabbage White, 7-4.
And Toby placed it at 40-1.
40-1?
That's the weakness. The odds are fantastic. No bookie would give them. And another thing, what bookie, especially a small man, would allow a punter to win 7,000 in 3 years, In practice, they don't stand for a consistent winning streak. They tell them to bet elsewhere.
But, can we prove all this?
I wouldn't even try. The thing to do is to call his bluff. You get Charters and Toby up here and make it soon.
The meeting is very soon, and it is not friendly.
I want to get this absolutely clear, Mr. Charters. Is this the first you've seen or heard of bookmakers' accounts?
Yes.
Did Dixon, at any time prior to this interview, mention betting wins?
I'm here to represent my client, not to be cross-examined.
But you are a professional man. You wouldn't care to be associated with a piece of deliberate trickery. You wouldn't wish to plead your client's case on the basis of a calculated fraud. Here, look at these papers. Study them. Wins up and down the country, enormous odds, 20, 30, 40, even 50-1. Not a losing bet in 3 years. Oh, come, Mr. Charters, let's not be naive. Do you really suggest these are bona fide accounts, do you?
In the circumstances, I'd rather my client answered that question.
I'll put it to him. Dixon, are these accounts Bona fide?
Bona what?
Bona fide. Are they on the level?
True as I sit here.
Did you write them?
No.
Did you pay for them?
No.
Not Guppy?
No.
You still claim they're bona fide betting wins?
Yes.
Mr. Charters, I don't think your client appreciates his position. Would you care to put it to him?
I hardly think...
I'm asking you to put a hypothetical case.
Hmm? Very well. I go as far as this. If documents known to be false are presented to the revenue, then the party places himself in a most perilous position.
You hear that, Dixon? A most perilous position. Your own accountant advises you to admit to their falsity.
I never said that.
Oh, it amounts to the same thing. They are false.
Prove it, then. You're so cocksure, prove it.
You stick to your story?
By glue.
All right. You stick. Well, let's relax. Have a puff. I'll try and put the thing in perspective. Now, there's a touch of the comic in all back duty cases. I suppose it's the cat and mouse element, the revenue puss leaping in perpetual pursuit and never quite getting its claws in. It's a game that started with the imposition of the first income tax. It's developed its own rules, and it's played on both sides with a dash of good humour, a bit of give and take, and a degree of cut and thrust. And in the end, the bad boy pays up. The slate's left clean, and the state has no further claim. But there are rules. If the defaulter aids the investigation, then in practice we don't hunt too hard. But if he obstructs it, if he seeks to escape behind a web of lies, deceit, and fraud, we use every weapon at our disposal. And in your case, Dixon, the particular weapon is a criminal prosecution under the Perjury Act.
Criminal prosecution?
Imprisonment as well as a fine. Think, Mr. Dixon. It's no good relying on Guppy.
You'd go to Guppy.
Of course. He's assessed in Tyburn District, and I can make an inquiry through my colleague there.
I see.
Even if he actually falsified them for you, we'd surrender our rights against him in return for admission.
You've got all the trumps, ain't you?
Sir Dixon, I'm going to question you again. Take your time. Don't answer without careful thought. Now, are these statements false?
Yes.
Did you write them?
Yes.
And are the bankings in the Marylebone account shop receipts?
Yes.
Autumn passes into winter before Charters and Gaunt reach agreement. The file has grown fat. 7 months of argument and computation have crystallized into a single sheet of foolscap paper which Gaunt holds pinioned beneath his hand. Outside, the spars and riggings are white with frost. And Toby is immaculate. The shoes are glint with the beauty of expensive leather, the suit impeccable, the tie stabbed with a solitary lustrous jewel. Prosperity sits unmistakably on those well-clad shoulders.
I hear you're being put out to grass in a day or two, Mr. Gaunt.
Grass? Yes. 40 years in the revenue service?
Gaunt's last case.
It is that.
Yeah, out in a real blaze of glory.
Mr. Dixon, I've no doubt your professional advisor has explained to you the significance of these computations.
Well, I know what the damage is, if that's what you mean.
The tax and surtax lost to the revenue amount to £7,500.
You smoke cigars?
On occasion.
Well, ain't this an occasion?
Yes, I suppose it is.
We'll have one. We'll all have one. Cost me seven or tenner apiece.
Thanks. You look very prosperous, Mr. Dixon.
Now, you feel this material. Set me back 40 guineas, and there's a dozen just like it hanging up at home.
I really don't see
it. It's a beautiful home and all, full of lovely stuff. I've got a Chinese carpet. Cost me 400 guineas. Antique furniture, the lot.
All this reckless talk.
Forget it. Look, I'm sick of the old game. Sick of coming here shabby. Sick of pretending I've done no good. I'll tell you something, Mr. Gaunt. I've been worried sick about this case. It's stuck in my craw. I woke up in the night with it. And it wasn't nothing to do with the money. It wasn't until yesterday I realized what it was. I've been in this office 4 or 5 times. Each time I walked out that door, I've been about 3 foot high. And you know why? I'll tell you. I've sat in this chair, and the kind of togs I give to my gardener. I've had to scrub the nicotine off my fingers with pumice. I've had to talk a load of bull about not smoking, not drinking, not having enough money to keep my wife and kids. Well, my family's got everything it needs, everything. I've done well, Mr. Gaunt. Damn well. I started from nothing, I've built up a good business, and don't let any man tell you Toby Dixon's a flop. I'm proud of what I've done. Proud!
We are here today to consider the offer you're to make in settlement. I've already explained to you that mere restitution of the tax lost is not sufficient to close the case. You've made yourself liable to penalties under the various sections of the Income Tax Act, and we can, if we choose, proceed against you for the full amount of those penalties, and to say nothing of any action that's open to us under the Perjury Act.
Yes, you got the whip.
We have an express power to mitigate those penalties, but the degree of mitigation depends entirely on the circumstances of the case. Now, at some point in the investigation, I generally place a case in one of a number of categories. Genuine error, mere carelessness, negligence, deliberate fraud. I don't think there's any doubt which one you fall into, Dixon.
I've been a bad boy.
I also have to consider other factors. Has the defaulter aided the investigation or obstructed it? What is his present financial position? Has he withheld material information?
Like Chinese carpets?
Exactly. I'd also like to make it quite clear that I've no individual authority to accept an offer. I can only make a recommendation to the Board of Inland Revenue, and the Board will either accept or reject.
What offer had you in mind?
A penalty of 100%.
100%?
I don't get it.
You owe the revenue $7,500. Means you have to offer $15,000 in settlement.
$15,000?
Well, after all, you've had the use of our money. You've built your business on it. You can't expect to found your future security at our expense. Yeah, and think of the compound interest the government's had to pay.
All the same.
I still can't say what attitude the board's likely to take. They may decide on a criminal prosecution as a matter of public policy. Fraudulent evidence, you know.
Penalty of 100%. That's savage.
Mm. It's not my job to advise your client, but I'll give you my candid opinion. Anything less than 15,000, and I think the board will prosecute.
I couldn't advise.
Pay it.
But
pay it.
That's your decision, Mr. Dixon?
Yes.
In that case, Mr. Charters, if you'll let me have a formal offer in due course.
After Charters and Toby Dixon have departed, Gaunt and East move to the window, stare pensively at the walls through spirals of cigar smoke.
Pretty, isn't it? Ice on the masts.
Very pretty.
And I shall miss it. I've learned a lot about ships since I've been here. Do you remember that day when the tarantula got loose from the banana crate?
We spent the whole morning watching him catch it.
Nice cigars.
Yes.
And we'll open the windows when we've finished. It doesn't smell quite right for a revenue office.
As Toby said, you certainly went out in a blaze of glory.
A full 100%.
Enormous, isn't it?
Best I've ever done.
The board may not like it.
Oh, who cares? I shan't be here.
Funny chap.
Hmm? Who, Dixon?
Hmm. Coming here in that scarecrow outfit long after we knew he'd got money.
Oh, they all do that. It's a kind of tradition with tax evaders. But it's strange how a man's pride will suddenly assert itself. He couldn't bear to play the unsuccessful businessman. He just had to speak his piece.
I rather admire him for it.
Yes. Yes, I despised him until then. That little outburst cost him about 2,000 quid. I was about to suggest a 75% penalty. But I still have the feeling there's something we don't know. He was a bit too quick in agreeing to the settlement. It was hardly a quibble. Almost as if he was relieved to get out of it at that figure. 15,000, it sounds fine when you say it quickly, but I wonder...
Outside the building, Toby and his accountant are parting in high good humour, on Toby's side, at any rate.
Let me tell you, Mr. Charters, if old Dracula thinks he's got Toby Dixon down on the floor, he'd better think twice, sitting there rubbing his hands as pleased as Punch. Anything less than 15,000, I think the board will prosecute.
A lot of money, Mr. Dixon.
Old Toby can find it. And I'll tell you what they can do with it. They can put it towards the next civil servant's backdated pay increase.
It's still a lot of money.
Cheer up, Gov. Biscuit tins. Remember? I still got my biscuit tins.